welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and I'm glad you're here tonight. You know, this is my second show today after being gone for Hurricane Irma, so welcome. You know, we do everything from romance to revenge. Earlier, a romance writer was on, and now a Seamus award-winning author and Anthony-nominated author, John Shepherd, is with me to talk about his book, Beware the Shill, which is the third and final book in his Shill trilogy. Welcome to the show, John. How are you tonight?
I'm good, Pam. How are you? Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Congratulations on the nomination for the Anthony. I think this is kind of a timely discussion since Boucher starts Wednesday. That's officially Thursday, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I think I'm on a flight Wednesday, and then we'll it all kicks off officially, I believe, Thursday morning.
Thursday morning, although it's always a lot of fun, even if you don't go to the panels, because, you know, most all crime fiction writers hang out in the bar. That's all there is to it. Let's be serious. But you hear some of the best stories there, and if you're someone who listens to authors talk like I do, I get some great stories to come back home with. Unfortunately, I won't be going this year.
I'm sorry. You won't be there. It's always fun. It's always you know what? What I would put it is, we all of us crime writers, we kind of pick up where we left off at that convention.
You really do. Well, next year you're in my backyard in St. Pete, so I hope to see you there. But let's talk about you for a bit. You've won a Seamus already for a short story. You were in one of the zines, right? Tell us about that.
Alfred Hitchcock. Yes, Alfred Hitchcock.
And Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah. And what was the name of your story?
So the story is titled Ghost Negligence. It was the first of a Private Eye series, which I have, and featuring Jack O'Shea. He's a deception specialist. So he's a retired con man who had a horrible, tragic incident in his life, feels guilty, and is trying to reform himself. So now he started out just being an expert witness for a lawyer who does insurance fraud, and then eventually hung his own shingle as a PI. And now he works on the other side, basically chasing down con men and deception. So that's the character, is kind of hard-bitten, a loner of a private eye, and there's Ghost Negligence was the first, the debut of that character, followed up by another, the second in that, was called Of Dogs and Deceit, and that was actually nominated for the Anthony, and Raleigh. Didn't come home with the hardware, but it was great to be nominated, and then third in the series is out and now in the September-October edition of Alfred Hitchcock Mystery Magazine, and that's on newsstands now.
Oh, fun! I love that magazine. I think if you can write a short story for Hitchcock Magazine, that you would truly a writer, because some people cannot write shorts in any way, shape, or form. They are unable to tell a story without doing it, you know, 70,000 words or more. So do you find it difficult to switch from the short version to a longer version?
I don't. I started writing short stories just as I kind of dipped my toe into writing crime fiction. And so when you just start there, I didn't jump into a novel first. I actually started with flash fiction and then moved it up a little bit with just regular short stories. So no, I don't think it's a different medium. You kind of have to, I think you have to approach it differently I should say it's a different format, but you have to approach it differently. But
right.
I don't have a problem jumping from one to another, back and forth but I know some authors how do you do such a short story? I can never do it. I'm like, well, I don't know if I could sit down and write a 150,000 word novel either. So, you know, super long tome. Well, so I tend tends to be shorter, you know. So it falls right in my wheelhouse.
Well, it's interesting to me because everyone says, you know, everyone being everyone in the business says that readers go for shorter stories now than they ever had before. And maybe that's time constraints. Maybe it's too much time on social media. I'm not sure what it is, but I can appreciate it that in the days of like Elmore Leonard and so on and so forth, who wrote their stories did not, they were novella size, you know, or you could go to remember when you could go to a five and dime and spin the rack of books there and you'd pick one up, but it was always a shorter book. And then somehow they got longer, and then they got really long, like when, you know, in the era of Shogun, and which was 1,200 pages, which I read, by the way. And like Terry Hayes, who wrote I Am Pilgrim, I think his book was like 750 pages. So those are monster books. And I guess you really have to have the time for that, right?
Yeah, you do. I think it's a matter of taste. I like you enjoy that. I've so enjoyed the paperback spinner rack kind of classic thing. It's been so great. Like
yeah.
Hard Case Crime has brought that back, and the great
yeah.
book artwork, and it's just so fantastic. So yeah, I was always drawn to that stuff as well. The pulp kind of spinner rack. There's
yep.
a so yeah. Speaking of the novella length, on the October newsletter for Down and Out Books, they asked that I contribute a little essay. So I wrote about the novella format, which just came out today. I compare that. My little comparison is that if you think of it as a meal, see, the novella is kind of eating off the small plates menu. So And it's, you know, it's the stuff I've always read and enjoyed reading, tight, kind of clean prose. I'm just attracted to that. And so then as I, you know, started writing over the years, I always tried to emulate what I'd like so much.
It's interesting that you say that because I'm thinking, you know, I get a lot of requests from publishers to read and review or interview authors who write literary fiction, and I have to be honest with you, I'm not smart enough to read literary fiction, and it's too narrative intense for me. I don't know if I'm saying it the right way, but I think you probably know what I mean. Like, I don't want to read about someone's emotions for 20 pages or scenery or memories or something like that. Just, you know, get to the, tell me the story. Just tell me the story. Does that make sense?
It completely makes sense. I completely makes sense. So we're on the same page.
Yeah. So you have a very interesting background, though. Did you start off as a director and a writer for film and television? Is that originally how you decided to? So how did that come about, John?
Well, I always loved the movies. I always wanted to be, you know, working at my grandfather was a pioneer in visual effects many, many years ago. And then, so it was kind of in the family, but although my grandmother wouldn't let either of her two sons, my dad or my uncle, get anywhere close to show business. So here it was a generation later, and I'm like, oh, I'll poke around. So I actually went to film school in New York, went to Columbia University, and then I was fortunate enough to be part of the Sundance June Lab over the years. I worked there as an editor. That was fun, like going to summer camp. And then started making films. Actually, my first film was titled Teenage Bonnie and Klepto Clyde, so very much in the crime genre. But at the time, you know, they had all these blockbusters on every corner. So there was a real thirst for movies. So it was great. They were actually paying, you know, companies making these films. So a lot more opportunity there is now. So I was fortunate to start then and made a handful of films and done television and reality recreation but one thing about that business is, as you know, and most people can assume. You see, you got a script, you work on it forever, and it just doesn't go beyond the script phase. Or I felt like I had to flex my creative muscles more than that and said, well, I'll start writing fiction, because at least fiction, it's finished. It's something, and I'm not waiting for a producer or an actor or a star or a studio, what have you,
sure,
come in. So that's how I started. And I started with flash fiction and then moved on. And then we were talking about Gross Negligence. I was thrilled when I got that letter that Alfred Hitchcock would publish it. And then here we are Electric Boogaloo is the name of the third, which is out in this September, October version. So that was, and I've just continued to do that. And then I had this idea I really wanted to do, that became the Shill trilogy. And Beware the Shill is the third of those. It's a three novellas put together. Beware the Shill is the third. It all wraps up with that one, and that's the one that's nominated for the Anthony.
Your trilogy actually turns out to be a little bit longer than a full length book, so it's not hard to take bites of this. But you're a very pulpy writer, and I kind of like that, because you're noir and pulp kind of mashed up together. And it's really snappy dialogue, very snappy dialogue, and I appreciate that. A lot of dialogue is very static, and it doesn't move a story forward. Yours seem to move it at a pretty fast clip. So anyone who wanted to read, for example, one of the books, they average about 170 pages or so, I think. You really could sit down and read the story in one day and have a very satisfying story, having consumed something very satisfying. Was it your intention to always write it a trilogy, or did you know that's what you were going to do? Did you just have more story to tell?
You know, initially I jumped into a novel, and then there was a publisher that had come onto the scene that was just devoted to novellas, and I thought to myself, huh, okay, well, I'll submit it. And I knew some people, other crime writer friends of mine, who were with them. And so they went ahead and published it. Now, that publisher since has gone defunct, and I was able to find Down and Out, which graciously took it. And it helped that the first publisher, I never had a signed contract with him. But so I just signed with Eric Campbell at Down and Out, and then we had the first, the second, and then I followed up with the third. So that's how that came about. So the idea was, you know, in a way that, you know, it's a little bit of a serialized writing too, and at the end of book one and book two, there's kind of a zinger that takes you into the next. So that was the intention, and you know, people seem to have responded well, so I'm ecstatic.
Maybe it is owing to your script writing background that this novella length has worked for you so well, because it is in essence you're writing a very stripped down story, and novellas, and particularly crime fiction, do not play around with the flowery background and things like that. You know, we're not so concerned about someone, you know, the colors of the flowers blooming or anything like that. So maybe that was a good learning curve for you, or a really good place for you to jump off, do you think?
It was from screenwriting to fiction. You know, out of all the fathers of noir, my all-time favorite, without question, was James M. Cain. And he, of course, had a career in Hollywood, and then was in his 40s, I think, when Postman Always Rings Twice was published.
Right.
So he had some time out here, this guy from Maryland, you know, knocking around, writing additional dialogue in writers' rooms. And then he writes this sensation novella. But it's not just the size of his books, you know, and followed up with Double Indemnity, and both of those were about 36,000 words. But it's not just the size of his books that really intrigued me, but it was he says so much with so little. He has such an ability to with so little say so much, and it's what you see, what your mind's eye sees. So you talk about all those details that as an author he doesn't necessarily have to fill out because he gives you the rope to do it yourself, just enough.
I think that's a smart author. I really do, because you don't want to treat your reader as an infant. You don't want to dumb down your stories, and you don't want to have to pick and choose every word and implant it in your reader's brain. You have to let them have their own imagination with the story, which is something I appreciate very much, because I open a book and I feel like a movie starts for me. I can create my own scenes and character and background, whether it was your intention or not, but it makes it more enjoyable for me. Yeah, I'm just seeing the movie based on the script you've written in your book. So I think that's an important thing to acknowledge. Congratulations on that. I'd like to ask you to tell listeners about the Shill series and who the Shill is and your main characters, please.
So my main character, speaking of Hollywood, my main character her name is Jane Innes, and she's a struggling actress in her, just turning 30. She's really not had a break. She's lonely, doubts herself, kind of controlled by her acting teacher, who really doesn't give her much of anything. She's just kind of in this real doldrum, and she comes across in her acting class this handsome guy, and he kind of sweeps her off her feet and takes her out, and she's got to borrow clothes from her roommate to go to the places that he's taking her. I mean, she can't believe it. And then of course he just dumps her, and she's like, well, what's that? Finally confronts him. What's that about? And he admits to her that, listen, I'm a con man, and I'm looking for somebody to play my wife. And I've been searching different acting schools around, and, you know, find someone who can play this, who can impersonate a rich and carefree heiress. And I thought you'd be really good, but you don't have larceny in your heart. It's not part of you, Jane. Defiantly says, of course, listen, that's a part. I can play any part. And it convinces him to give her a shot. It's very much what I was drawn to is kind of the Pygmalion story or the My Fair Lady kind of story, where you take a girl from the other side of the tracks and you have to make her something she's not. So he takes her and grooms her to be this carefree heiress, so that he can get close to the Mark, which is this international banker who is cold as ice. And the only way to get to him is through his wife, because he's been approached by the best salesman on earth, but his wife is, she's very social and beautiful. And his idea is, you befriend his wife while they're staying at this Beverly Hills hotel over time, and then we'll go out together to get the ball rolling. So that's their caper. So in a very much way, it's a caper. She's a part in the scam. He needs her to play this role, and it's how she and it's all the steps she takes to do so. Of course, things go from bad to worse, we got some nice twists and turns, and it's a lot of fun. So, but Jane is kind of a, I don't know, she's a character who, through the series of the novellas, she goes from what I consider like a pawn, a sacrificial pawn, to a rook, where she can, you don't see her coming. So it's really her growth from really being like the victim to actually, in a revenge path, coming back and using the art of deception against the deceivers who set her up in the first place.
It's a terrific plot. It's a terrific plot, and I really like it a lot. You can tell you had fun with it. There's a little gleeful tone in your writing. I hope that's not insulting to you, but it sounds like, you know, you're kind of rubbing your hands together saying, twirling the mustache. Let's see what else we can do. And so you had fun writing this, did you?
I did. It was a blast. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. And it was fun. It was something that for years I had been collecting and studying the con. I did magic as a kid and stuff. I just loved the deception, the art of deception. That was all part of stuff I knew. And I have all these old dusty books of con men over the years and different kinds. I've collected that stuff and sitting around. It's always been something. And then when I started writing about it, I kind of combined what I knew, and that is, you know, the life of aspiring Hollywood into that world, and that was my intention, and so but yeah, you bet. I have a lot of fun. I crack myself up at the keyboards.
That's good. Well, you're enjoying it. Congratulations on the Anthony nomination for the final book, Beware the Shill, and I'm crossing my fingers that they'll call your name. Before I let you go, though, I want to ask you about Bottom Feeders.
So Bottom Feeders will be my first novel, and it comes out April 24th, 2018. That doesn't have the con men or what have you in it. It's a departure. It's something about an area I know very much, and that is the hapless cast and crew who work on low budget stuff in Hollywood. And these are the bottom feeders. These are the people that they're not working on the series and the network series and the union stuff. It's kind of that bottom of the barrel stuff. And there's plenty of it in Hollywood. And there's still, you know, always has been. And they all aspire for more. And so I set out to write a whodunit. And it's a low-budget TV movie being made up in Angeles Crest on an old movie ranch. And the cast and crew go up there and things don't go as planned, and they fall behind schedule. And then with approaching fires right now, as we speak, they're having a big fire here over here in Anaheim. It's just the way it is in California. They all have to evacuate, but not all of them get out. And those that are left, it's very much kind of a 10 Little Indians, Agatha Christie. They know they're being knocked off one-on-one. So my attempt was I love that whodunit format. And then I'm going to have a lot of fun writing about, the crew and the cast that are stigmatized as the bottom feeders.
I love it. How fun! And you have some really great quotes on that. From years of experience fighting in the trenches of low budget film, Shepherd has crafted a pulse pounding book, and that's by the guy who worked on Castle, right? You've got some really great quotes there. I love it. Steve Hamilton, who is one of my favorite writers today. Congratulations, you know,
for all the
accolades that you're getting on it. Can't wait to read it. You have my new address. You know where to send it.
Yeah.
And it's fun. You know, I'm thrilled that you've come on the show. John Shepherd, who is nominated for the Anthony for his book Beware the Shill. When you're up in VoucherCon and they hand you your piece of paper, your little ballot, please make sure you go and check John's name on it. Good luck to you, John, and come back and tell me how it was, what the experience is like when you get your hardware. Okay.
Oh, you know, listen, I'm up against a really great. I don't think it's. It is such a toss-up in that category, and the thing is, all of us authors know each other. We're all friends.
Who's in the category
and colleagues.
With you?
So Angel Cullen is in.
Angel.
S.W. Lawden, and Sarah Chen. Steve, I think Steve's been on your show.
A bunch of times.
And then, yeah.
So is
and then, and then Bonnie Stevens, who unfortunately has passed away. Bonnie, I believe, had a heart attack earlier this year. But I've known Bonnie from Alfred Hitchcock Mystery Magazine and from BoucherCons in the past. So, and she wrote a really wonderful story, which was a novella, which was published in Albert Hitchcock. So, that's our lineup.
Steve Louden and Angel Colon and Sarah Chan have all of the nominees have been on the show. At least I've given equal time to everyone. So I can't say I'm playing favorites. Everybody has been on. So,
perfect.
I'm very proud of that. Yeah. Great. Well, have a great time.
That's some stiff competition. So I think it's a true toss-up. And honestly, I think I'm the long shot in the group.
But you know what I think is great is that the four remaining of you, whether or not that Bonnie gets it posthumously or not, but let's say the four of you, what I like so much is that this is the noir genre being recognized, wherein, you know, much prior BoucherCons and other award ceremonies, you would not see newer writers on the list. So I'm really happy to see, you know, more contemporary noir, or as my friend Tom Pitts says, the neo-noirs up on the list for awards. It's really important. And, you know, to kind of bring in the new blood. Not that I don't appreciate all the other authors. I do. I like reading everybody's books. You know, I'm across the genre reader except for in horror, but and literary. So... But I think it's a good thing, and so it's encouraging to me to hear that. Let's take a call before we sign off. Hold on one second. Let's see who's calling. Hi, area code 860. You're live on the air.
Am I live on the air with John Shepherd, the John Shepherd?
You are indeed.
John Shepherd.
This sounds suspicious.
John Shepherd gleefully laughing. Why? This is Kate Pilarczyk, suspense author, intrigue promoter, but also a major fan of Authors on the Air, Pam Stack, and all the magic and the art of deception, which comes from John Shepherd.
Well, thank you. So for everyone who doesn't know, Kate is another BoucherCon regular. I've known her for a bunch of years. Kate was the year I won the Seamus. Kate made sure in a very crowded room to say it very loud.
That was without $5 from John Shepherd. That was a genuine belief in the man who is an illusion. That is difficult.
And then of course I was talking about magic tricks earlier,
I'm
always pulling out a card trick
or
something to confuse people. So, anyways, I think Kate, you've probably seen, I don't know, four or five of my tricks over the
you better pack them in your suitcase. You better pack them in your suitcase.
You know what I find interesting, John, is that I love magic, especially close magic, you know, close-up magic, where you have just kind of a fairly small audience. And for a while, I lived with I had a magician who was a roommate. He was also a musician, too. But, you know, I'd wake up and a cat would be spinning in the middle of the room, or, you know, something would – he was really good with cards, too. So I appreciate your kind of magic, and, damn, I'm sorry I'm not going to be there. But Kate, who is my cousin, is standing in for me and repping.
I am representing Authors on the Air.
Representing. She absolutely is representing Authors on the Air.
I will schmooze with the best of them.
Yes, I think Kate even has kind of her own little – organization within the organization there. So she's got, you know, her BoucherCon crime fiction friends, and Kate's part of the novella an anthology called Betrayed that Authors
on
the Air.
You mean Authors
on
the Air Press's very first book that releases October 18th? That book?
Our very first book. And Kate has a outstandingly wonderful short story in that book. So you'll all have to get together. And
thank you, but I have one question for the author. I have a question for the author.
Ask away.
John, have you
ask
ever
away.
fallen in love with any of your characters?
I think a lot of my characters I you kind of love or hate. So,
well, there you go, folks. John Shepherd, man with a heart.
Right.
There you go. Oh boy, I'm really gonna miss Boucher this year so much. But
well, we'll see you.
We'll
see you in St. Pete next year, right? Yeah.
You will see me in St. Pete, absolutely. But I also know Kate is going to keep me apprised of everything that goes on. As a matter of fact,
there'll be photos.
That she'll be doing a live show from someplace, and I'm sure she'll track you down. And it might be after the awards, before everybody gets too hammered. So I'm so glad you were here with me tonight, John. And Kate, as always, love you, cuz. Thank you.
Love the show. Great interview.
You too. Thanks, Pam.
Thank you.
I took notes. Bye.
John, bye. Thank you, John.
Thank
and
you.
Good luck. I'll be, putting out some Dancing Under the Stars or something, or the moon, whatever it is I'm supposed to do. So, and have fun up there, okay? Thanks much. Good night.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure thing. Bye-bye. And that's our show for tonight, folks. I'm so glad you were with me on my first day back. Thank you. Wednesday, I'm going to be talking to Leslie Karst, who is just a terrific, cozy mystery writer. She's funny, and she's also a foodie. So that's going to be a delicious conversation. Please join me, and thank you for being here tonight. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.